In any case, our last speaker today is Stan Temple, who is the Beers Bascom Professor Emeritus in Conservation in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. He's also the former chair of Conservation Biology and Sustainable Development Program in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. Stan was on the faculty here for 32 years, during which time he occupied the faculty position once held by Aldo Leopold, which is, I think, something rather special. And he did special things while in that position. And many, many grad students worked on conservation problems in 21 different countries and helped save some of the world's rarest and most visible endangered species. He's the recipient of many conservation biology awards as well as teaching awards, and so we are really, really pleased to have Stan wrap up our day here. The title of his talk today is Consequences of Bottlenecks for Evolution and Conservation. Thanks.
Well, actually, I'm going to start my talk with a perhaps familiar quote from Aldo Leopold. Aldo Leopold once noted that the first precaution of intelligent tinkering is to save all the parts. And as a conservation biologist, certainly saving the parts is what we are all about. Saving the parts, of course, is challenging in the world today because human beings are, of course, somewhat carelessly disposing of many of the biological parts of the global system. But conservation biologists have to be a hopeful lot. We have to be hopeful that human beings are going to get past this, we hope, temporary excess, and that the world will come out the other side and we will be able to find a way to live sustainably on the planet. So perhaps the biggest challenge for conservation biologists who are hopeful is, what do we do in the meantime? What do we do to preserve the world's biological diversity in a way that will allow it to continue after we get over our temporary period of excess? And it turns out that the issue is very much... Does it look small to you compared to everybody else's? Sorry, I didn't turn around to look. But it has very much to do with the phenomenon of bottlenecks. And in particular... As much to do with bottlenecks as we're going through one right now.
It's a high-res projector.
This is the...
Fancy new technology.
Let's go with that. Okay. This is a bottleneck. This is a population bottleneck. And it is the sort of theme for what I'm going to talk about today. And indeed, it is somewhat analogous to the period that we're going through right now with respect to biological diversity. In a population bottleneck, a population dwindles very rapidly to some small portion of its former size, usually in response to some relatively catastrophic change in the environment that causes elevations of mortality and reductions in reproduction. It bottoms out in the bottleneck, persists for some period of time at a smaller population size, and then recovers its numbers. Well, population bottlenecks like this, of course, characterize what many species in the world are going to be going through during the next period of time. And it has consequences. It has consequences both for conservation and for evolution. We looked at some of the genetic changes that take place through a population bottleneck. We can sort of get a glimpse into why population bottlenecks, especially for some of the world's endangered species, can have important consequences. This sort of diagrammatic figure shows allele frequencies in a large pre-bottleneck population. And in this simplistic example, the two alleles each have a frequency of 50%. As you move through time and the bottleneck population over here is not particularly severe, the population can make it through that bottleneck and retain not only all of the alleles that were present beforehand, but retain them in the same frequency. If the bottleneck is more severe, we see that passage through the bottleneck can actually cause some changes. In this case, it has changed the frequency of the alleles. And if the bottleneck is truly severe, we have the potential to actually lose alleles. Well, of course, these are consequences that are certainly not welcome in the history of a species. But nonetheless, if we were to look at what has happened here, it fits the definition of microevolution. We've had a change in allele frequencies over time. And in fact, population bottlenecks and the genetic drift that takes place across those bottlenecks is one of the mechanisms of microevolution. Our own Sewell Wright, noted geneticist from UW-Madison, studied bottlenecks in his early career and gave us some very elegant models of how genetic diversity changes through bottlenecks. And the thing to note here is that the smaller the bottleneck population becomes and the longer it remains in the bottleneck, the greater will be the loss of genetic variation. So as we move down the graph here and move to progressively smaller and smaller bottleneck sizes, we lose more genetic variation. And in all cases, the longer that you stay in the bottleneck, the greater will be the genetic loss. So to summarize, bottlenecks have some real consequences for evolution. Genetic drift clearly acts faster and produces more microevolutionary changes as bottlenecks get tighter and as time in the bottleneck increases. A post-bottleneck population can clearly diverge rather dramatically in some cases from the pre-bottleneck population. And perhaps most significantly, genetic variation can be significantly reduced by passage through a bottleneck. And that potentially influences the ability of the post-bottleneck population to respond to new selective pressures. Well, I am not a population geneticist. I'm a conservation biologist. So putting this in terms of the things that are important in my field, looking at endangered species and passage through bottlenecks, I've spent much of my career dealing with species that have undergone severe population bottlenecks. We look at this in the context of endangered species as a species going through a decline phase. At some point, it reaches a critical population size at which we declare it to be endangered and suddenly give it all kinds of conservation attention. It may linger for some time in the endangered phase, and hopefully, if we've done a good job as conservationists, the population will enter a recovery phase and come out the other side of the bottleneck. The issue, of course, is what has happened to these endangered species by virtue of passing through that bottleneck. We can predict that the consequences of severe bottlenecks are not likely to do the species any good in the long run. Unfortunately, many of the world's endangered species are passing through very severe bottlenecks. Among the species that my students and I have worked on, they have declined precipitously in response to very severe threats posed by human beings. In response to skillful management, many of them have recovered their numbers dramatically. But in the case of California condors and whooping cranes and Hawaiian geese and Puerto Rican parrots, they have passed through severe bottlenecks. The populations were reduced to extremely small population size before conservation activities managed to recover these populations. And the question is, of course, what are the consequences for these species? It looks good to say that we now have orders of magnitude more condors and whooping cranes in the world, but have they suffered as a result of passing through the bottleneck? Well, if we're going to talk about bottlenecks, there's one bottleneck that I studied, was involved with in my career, that is essentially the worst bottleneck that we know of any species in recent times passing through. And it happens to take place on a remote oceanic island about halfway around the world, the island of Mauritius, out in the middle of the ocean, in the Indian Ocean. The island of Mauritius, of course, from a conservation perspective, is a place that has a fairly notorious history. It was at one time the home of the dodo, a species that unfortunately did not make it through a bottleneck and come out the other side. Dodos went extinct a little over 3 centuries ago. But the island of Mauritius is also a place that features many endemic species that are unique to the island, and a host of them, most of them, are today endangered. With respect to the topic today, Mauritius was also one of the stops on the voyage of the Beagle. Charles Darwin spent a brief period of time on the island of Mauritius. But for me, when I went to the island of Mauritius back in the 1970s, it was essentially because Mauritius at that time was the home to some of the rarest species of birds in the world. And as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed postdoc, I thought I was going to go over there and basically make things straight. The species that caught my most focused attention was the Mauritius kestrel, a very unique species of bird of prey. It's endemic to the island of Mauritius and critically endangered. At the time, it was thought to be among the rarest birds in the world. From what we know, the population did decline very rapidly during the 20th century. Thinking of the litany of human-caused threats to species that you heard Jeremy Jackson talk about this morning, the poor Mauritius kestrel got a quadruple whammy. Its habitat was destroyed. We introduced exotic predators that ate its young. We sprayed DDT. And unfortunately, the French called the Mauritius kestrel mangeur de poule, the chicken killer. So it was persecuted. By 1974, when I studied the bird, the wild population was down to just 4 birds that included just a single breeding pair. You don't get a deeper bottleneck than that. The offspring of that single pair provided the basis for a recovery effort that of necessity featured captive breeding. So with the Mauritius kestrel, we have an example of a species that has passed through one of the most extreme bottlenecks that a species could pass through, down to 1 reproductive pair. The species did recover. The programs that were put in place did work. The Mauritius kestrel has indeed recovered its numbers. And today, after several generations in that extreme bottleneck, the captive breeding and reintroduction of the species has been very successful. The population is over 800 birds today. The wild population is pretty much saturated with kestrels. There are about as many as the island of Mauritius can support today. So, on the surface, you might say, boy, here's a great success story. We took a species that was literally on the brink of extinction, and it's back up to pretty much the carrying capacity of the environment today. But, of course, there are those genetic scars. Passage through the bottleneck had some serious consequences for the Mauritius kestrel. It lost 55% of the alleles that had been documented from looking at microsatellite loci in museum specimens from before the bottleneck. It lost 55% of its alleles. It's 60% of its heterozygosity. So the passage through that bottleneck had some very serious genetic and indeed probably evolutionary consequences for the Mauritius kestrel. Numerically, it looks like a success story. Genetically, evolutionarily, not so sure. The heterozygosity in the Mauritius kestrel is now about 85% lower than it is in non-endangered kestrel species. So its genetic variation has been extremely reduced as a result of passage through not only that recent bottleneck, but you have to imagine that a kestrel on a remote oceanic island passed through a bottleneck at some point in its previous history when it colonized the island in the first place. So the Mauritius kestrel today is a species that lacks a lot of genetic variation. And indeed, its future remains somewhat uncertain. We do know, however, I add that the rates of inbreeding and the loss of genetic variation are among the highest ever recorded in a wild vertebrate species population. So for people who are trying to affect the recovery of endangered species, who are trying to make sure that we get some of these species through the bottleneck, either the bottleneck that we're creating as human beings or the population bottleneck that they might be passing through as a result, we are very mindful of the fact that getting species through these bottlenecks takes some special attention. And indeed, the strategies that we use for getting endangered species through population bottlenecks are derived largely from the input of people like Sewell Wright, who let us understand the consequences of passing through bottlenecks. The things that we try to do sound straightforward enough, but it can sometimes be very difficult to actually affect. If we look at the first line of defense, it's to stop that decline phase as rapidly as possible. In other words, don't let that bottleneck get too small. Once it enters an endangered phase, you want to be sure that that endangered phase doesn't last very long. As Sewell Wright predicted, the smaller the population becomes and the longer it remains in that bottleneck, the worse will be the damage. We want to make the recovery phase as rapid as possible. And we certainly want to salvage as much of the genetic variation and evolutionary potential as possible. In the case of a species like the Mauritius kestrel, or the whooping crane, or California condors that have received special conservation attention, all of these were taken into account in the conservation effort for recovering these species. And indeed, we're hopeful that we have done as good a job as possible with some species that were in pretty rough shape. And although we pat ourselves on the back that there are now hundreds more Mauritius kestrels than there were just a few decades ago, more whooping cranes, more California condors, and so on, we still worry about their survival in a post-bottleneck world, not only after they've come out of their bottleneck, but after the human population on the Earth gets past the current period of basically wanton destruction of biological diversity. It doesn't look good. A recent analysis by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature concluded that 44% of the world's assessed species, the ones that were studied, that were understood well enough to be able to render an opinion, 40% of those assessed species are now threatened. Many, many more, of course, that have not been assessed are also threatened. And the stark realization is that many of those species, a large portion of the species on this planet, are going to be passing through severe bottlenecks before they recover. And obviously, in today's rapidly changing global environment, you realize that their evolutionary potential is going to be sternly challenged. These are species that have passed through a bottleneck and have the evolutionary scars, have the handicap of having passed through these population bottlenecks. And the question that all conservation biologists, even us hopeful ones, have is, will those species be able to persist in the future? We've done everything that we can. In the meantime, We hope that it's been enough so that in the future, those marvelous products of hundreds of millions of years of evolution will not only still be with us, but will still retain their potential to keep evolving.